Morning, family. Good to see all of you this morning. We want to welcome all of our visitors. It's almost like it's International Citizens Day. We got the Suitors here this morning and Wassam here this morning. Good to see all of you. If you're visiting with us this morning, please, please fill out one of those white cards that's on the back of the pew in front of you. We really appreciate getting to know that you're here and getting to know you. Stick around a little bit so we can talk with you. A couple of things before we get into the lesson. This is not the correct slides. There should be one in the folder under, that was last week. Let's go know your rights. There we go. Perfection. As always, guys in the back. Awesome. That's the one we should be looking at. A couple of announcements this morning before we get into the lesson. You guys are terrific. And I have a confession to make. I don't like it when Todd leads singing. No, that's not my confession. We are a terrific group of people, and whenever good things happen, we like to show it. And we like to shed our love in grandiose amounts on those that we have been praying about and keeping tabs on through social media of different challenges that they face. This morning, a terrific thing is going on. In that back room is Ashley, Chris, and Jacob. Now, I know all of us want to run back there right now because that's how we are. Okay, and I can appreciate that, and the family can appreciate that greatly. What they are asking is that today is not the day that we inundate them with 50 million people and our amount of love. They know that you love them, and they appreciate your love. They're just trying to keep things a little bit more calm for Jacob right now. And you might be tempted to think, well, I know them really well. You're the one we're really talking to. Today's not the day. They know we love them. Let's love them from a distance until it's a better time to where we can get closer to them. I know that they will appreciate that. Last week, second announcement that talks about how awesome we are. Last week, the elders announced through the sermon and an excellent byplay in the sermon that was completely scripted, by the way, even though one of them forgot the script. The elders announced our theme for 2020, and the theme is going to be Seeing God with 2020 Vision. You may have seen the post on the Facebook page with the picture of the elders in their glasses. And just as a reminder, we're going to be spending the entire year, that will be Sunday morning sermons, and Wednesday night Bible classes are going to be focused and devoted to that theme, and we're going to look at seeing God as He intended, seeing God clearly in creation, seeing God clearly in His Son, seeing God's purpose clearly in our lives is going to be the theme for next year. And again, we're not doing this. The elders haven't decided to do this because they are the ultimate cheese masters of the universe. But they understand that when each of us sees God more clearly, everything else in our lives comes into focus. And when everything else comes in our lives comes into focus, we are better for each other as a group. We will all benefit from that. And that being said, we have glasses. Who is that good-looking fellow? Was that you, babe? It better be, right? We have glasses. I want to encourage you. Get the glasses. Snap a selfie. Doesn't have to be as good as this one, but snap a selfie, which, by the way, is the first ever selfie I've ever taken. I had made it a point to never take a selfie, and I broke the rules. You're welcome. Grab the glasses, snap a selfie of yourself, or have someone take a picture of you. Put on the Facebook page. I'm committed to seeing God more clearly in 2020. Share it on your personal social media. Don't care. Let's get the word out that Grandview Church of Christ is focused and committed on seeing God more clearly in 2020 and beyond. That we're not just going to do it for a year, that we're wanting to make this a practice for our lives. Okay. Shepherd Sunday this morning, last one of the year, number 24. What if I was to talk to you about a man in leadership? And I began to describe him as greedy, violent, engaged in bribery, that would be both giving and receiving, prone to confiscation of public property that did not belong to him. Would you think I was talking about one of our elected officials today? What if I told you that by the consent of the governed, this man and all of his allies have established an autocracy? An autocracy is nothing more than a system of government with absolute power, okay? And the decisions that this autocrat makes are not subject to external legal restraints. Would you think I am talking about what is happening in our society today? That this man who is in a position of leadership believes that he is above the law, but not only in his own mind does he believe that he's above the law, the people that he governs also believe that he is above the law. How would we respond if we found ourselves living in such a society? What would you do? Would you be shocked to find that a person in leadership is that kind of individual? Would it make you sad? Would you be angry? Would you do anything? Or just be shocked, angry, and sad? Would you remain silent and continue to let, you know, injustice flow like a river of sewage through the society? How would we respond to such a scenario? And what I've described is the state of many who rule society. Let's put that in quotes, rule society. You know, violence, greed, oppression, it's not new to our society. I'm not describing what I just described to you. All of you probably have a particular individual in your mind, or at least several individuals in your mind of people who are engaged in that type of behavior. This isn't new to our society. We understand that, right? That this has been going on since man had figured out that we need government. We need leadership. We need someone in authority to do something. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like The Clash did when, you know who The Clash is, punk rock band, Rock the Casbah. Okay, I'm getting more head shakes now. They were a highly political group, but they wrote a song called Know Your Rights. And in this song, they said, you have the right to not be killed. Murder is a crime. Unless it is by an aristocrat. You have the right to free speech, as long as you're not dumb enough to actually try it. And they'll go through the song and say, know your rights. And there's only three rights that they talked about in the song. And I think our challenge this morning, other than one of my challenges this morning is to step on enough toes to make us uncomfortable to where we're actually going to do something about it. But I think our challenge is not necessarily to identify the injustice that we see around us in our elected officials or in the society and community that we find ourselves living in. I think that's a pretty easy task, actually. Whether you want to admit it or not, it's really easy to know if someone is being greedy, violent, and oppressing someone. Now, whether you're willing to actually admit the truth of that to yourself is another discussion for another time. I think identifying these types of behaviors is actually really easy. But what I want to work on this morning is our responsibility when we recognize that this is happening around us. How do we deal with a leadership that is greedy, oppressive, violent, unjust, prone to confiscation of public property, whatever you want to put in that list, let's just say evil? What is my responsibility as a Christian, as a person in this world, when I recognize this is going on around us? Now, before we get into Acts 23, let's set some guidelines. I think this is going to be helpful for us. We're going to set some guidelines, set some rules, some principles, and as long as you all agree with me, we can move forward. If you guys don't all agree with me, the lesson's going to be done, and it's not going to be the 50-minute lesson that Todd promised you, so you have to agree with me. First principle, let's turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 29. Here's the first one. This is a prayer of David. The people have assembled. David says there in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, we're going to start in verse 10. So David blessed the Lord in the sight of all the assembly, and David said, "Blessed are you, O Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and on the earth, yours is the dominion, O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all. And in your hand is power and might, and it lies in your hand to make great and to strengthen everyone. Now, therefore, O God, we thank you and praise your glorious name." And we're going to just pause and stop right there. Here's our first guideline, our first principle for this morning, that we are going to thankfully acknowledge that God is the ruler over all things. Okay? That we thankfully acknowledge that God is ruler over all things and that he is the source of rule and authority. Okay, that's guideline number one. Guideline number two. I know that Archie already read it. Thank you. We're going to read it again. Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19, we're going to start in verse 11, says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. You shall not swear falsely by my name, so as to profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not oppress your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of a hired man are to remain with you all night until morning. You shall not curse a deaf man, nor place a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall revere your God. I am the Lord. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly. You shall not go about as a slanderer among your people, and you are not to act against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor," that would be correct, "but shall not incur sin because of him." Here's guideline number two. First one is that we thankfully acknowledge that God is the ruler over all things and he is the source of all rule and authority. Guideline number two, that as part of society and community, God calls us to be just in our dealings with our fellow man. That's guideline number two. As part of society and community, God calls us to be just in our dealings with our fellow man. Quick question, raise your hand if you are a part of society and community. Okay, so we recognize that that applies to everyone. That's rule. Remember we talked a couple weeks ago about rule of law, how rule of law says that everyone is subject to law and that should be held accountable to that law, that no one is above the law. All right, can we agree to these two guidelines and principles? All right, I got three heads shaking. We're moving on. Because if we can agree to this, all right, if we can agree that God is the ruler over all things and he is the source of all rule and authority and that we're supposed to be just in our dealings with our fellow man and this applies to everyone, we're going to find ourselves in pretty good company, actually. Real good company. Minority, but real good company. All right, Paul is going to be numbered amongst that, right? So let's turn over to Acts chapter 23 if you haven't already. We're going to get there in a second. But Paul's run into some trouble. He's been presenting his defense before the Jewish council in chapter 20, or before the Jews in chapter 22. Everything is going great. You know, it's kind of like when you go and you listen to an old-fashioned gospel sermon and everything is going great and you're amening with the preacher all day long until he says something that actually affects you and then you're like, "Whoa, buddy, wait a minute. Okay, how dare you talk directly to me?" And so this is kind of the scenario as Paul is presenting his defense. And then he gets right up to the end and he says, "Therefore God has sent me to the Gentiles to declare this gospel." Well, that didn't go over well. A little riot starts. He's saved by the Roman commander and he's going to be questioned through scourging as to what's going on and everything that's happening. Well, finds out as he's about to be scourged that he mentions that, "Hey, just want to let you know, kind of a Roman citizen here. Is this how it normally works?" Commander finds out that he's a Roman citizen. He's afraid. He's not scourged. And then it's at this point that he wants to determine what is going on, what is happening, why are they treating Paul in this way. And so then we pick up in Acts chapter 22, verse 30, and we'll get into chapter 23 from there. So he says, "But on the next day, wishing to know for certain why he had been accused by the Jews, he released him and ordered the chief priests and all the council to assemble. and brought Paul down and set him before them. So that's our setting. Paul is before the chief priests and the council. There are probably, more than likely, other members of the Jewish community who are there witnessing this. This is not a small group of people that Paul is standing before. Okay? Paul, looking intently at the council, said, "Brethren, I have lived my life with a perfectly good conscience before God up to this day." The high priest Ananias commanded those standing beside him to strike him on the mouth. And Paul said to him, "God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Do you sit to try me according to the law and in violation of the law order me to be struck?" But the bystander said, "Do you reveal God's high priest?" They're shocked. Paul said, "I wasn't aware, brethren, that he was high priest. For it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people.'" All right, a couple things. Don't forget the principles. First, Ananias, appointed as high priest by Herod the Fifth, grandson of Herod the Great. He's not serving as high priest because of lineage. He's serving as high priest because it's a political position. Okay? Ananias is described by Josephus, pay attention, as greedy, violent, engaged in bribery, and scheming to take the property of the priests working in the temple. And despite all of this, Josephus says that the people loved him. They adored him. In fact, it's not going to be until several years later when Ananias is killed hiding out in a cistern by what we might, or what people might consider at that point, the zealots for his pro-Roman policies. Second thing. This is the man who now orders that Paul be smacked in the mouth because Paul had the audacity to say, "I have lived my life with a perfectly clean conscience up to this day." Okay? So to have Paul slapped is in violation of the law. Leviticus 19, which we've had read twice now, is very clear about injustice and impartiality in the way that we deal things. But turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 25 real quick. And let's pay attention, because the law did prescribe that you could go smacking on your brother. Okay? But here's what Deuteronomy 25 says, starting in verse 1. He says, "If there is a dispute between men, and they go to court, and the judges decide their case, and they justify the righteous and condemn the wicked, then it shall be, if the wicked man deserves to be beaten, the judge shall then make him lie down and be beaten in his presence with the number of stripes according to his guilt. He may beat him 40 times, but no more, so that he does not beat him with many more stripes than these, and your brother is not degraded in your eyes." That's not happening here. In Acts 23. In fact, anybody ever been smacked in the mouth? I'm not talking like being punched in the mouth, like if you're in a fight. I'm talking about somebody just pop, smacks you in the mouth. You know what that's designed to do? Put you in your place. That's what it's designed to do. And it says something that Ananias, who is prone to violence, that's the first thing that comes out of his mouth the minute that Paul starts talking. "Hey, smack that guy in the mouth." So he's violated the law. The Roman-appointed high priest has violated the law. Anybody shocked yet? Okay. All right. So here's the deal, guys. Ananias holds the office of high priest. And you can quote me, he ain't no high priest. Not according to God's standards. He is not a high priest. And Paul recognizes that. He recognizes a man in leadership and authority who is greedy, violent, oppressive, and refuses to be silent and cowed and intimidated. And I'm convinced, based on those couple of things that I just told you, that Paul, that's why Paul says what he says in verses 3 and 5. Pay attention. Right? He says, "God's going to strike you, you whitewashed wall." And we read that and we're like, "Ooh, that was pretty, woo-hoo, Paul getting a little crazy there with the whitewash wall thing." That's a big deal at this point. In Jesus' rebuke of the Pharisees, remember what he had talked about? The tombs, the cup? I think the full weight of that statement is lost on us as we look at it. But this is a big deal. This means you're being something on the outside that you're not on the inside. Okay? He says, and you're going to sit there and judge me, try me according to law, and in violation of law, hit me? Mm-mm. No. That's not how it works around here. And look at the shock. Hear the shock on the people's faces when Paul says, he just called the it's like the oxygen level in the room just decreased 50% the minute that he said that. And Paul's response is wonderful. Because what Paul is essentially saying is this, okay? That man that's sitting up there, he's no high priest. A true high priest wouldn't break the law and be a tyrant. If he was a true high priest, I wouldn't have said that. And find himself in violation of himself in violation of the law. I'm judging by the looks on your faces that only a few of you have ever heard the phrase the big igloo. Or bugaloo. Boogaloo. No? Okay. The big igloo, or the boogaloo, is a reference to a civilian uprising against a corrupt and overbearing government. They're going to do this because of overreach, overtaxation, restrictions, corruptions, etc. Those are all, and the alphabet boys are another thing that they're against, is what the Boogaloo boys are against. I reference it because to my way of thinking, whoever coined the phrase isn't interested in anything but replacing said government with one of their own. That's all they're really about. And they're going to use violence, greed, and oppression to do so. Now, that's not to say that we don't stand against violence, oppression, injustice in society and in the leadership of our community, or even speak out against any unjust leadership in any form. But it should never be done in such a way that promotes our way of thinking. Does that make sense? Okay? Because I think that that's a challenge for us in this world that we live in. I think that you're not doing things right. Well, what is the easiest way for me to get Jason Warren to do things right? Jason, what's the easiest way for me to get you to do what's right? Yeah, I'm going to make it. Right? It's kind of like Mitch and I have had the conversation where, you can't make people do things. Really? You give me a chair and a roll of duct tape, I can make you do a whole lot. What determines, or who determines, the right way of doing things? Because that's really a question you should be considering on the subject that we're talking about this morning in judgment of leadership. Because if I'm only trying to make the leaders do what I think, does not make me any better necessarily than that leader that I am trying to judge. Remember the principles. God is ruler over all. All mankind is meant to be just in our dealings with each other. God is the one that sets the standard for behaviors. Okay? And that also applies to those in leadership. So that means that when it comes time to judge our leaders, now people will probably use a different turn of phrase when we talk about judgment of leaders. It's called Election 2020, okay, which I think is just one small facet of how we as a populace judge leadership, okay? When it comes time to judge our leaders, it isn't enough to simply vote the bum out. And I don't care what letter is behind your name. I really don't. Because I think too many times when we're trying to promote what's right, we're only following some false dichotomy of a of a party line that goes completely against what God's standard is for life. And we throw our unity in on that and think that we're going to be able to judge our leadership according to God's standard and completely fail and just to replace a system of leadership with something that we want and not what God is calling us to do. Judgment of leaders involves education of the community. Let's say, for instance, that Mr. Melvin is unjust in his leadership. He is not, by the way. And I've recognized it. Well, then I'm just going to call for a vote and we'll get Ron out of there and we'll be done, right? But if Ron is unjust, does that really work? No, because to Todd's way of thinking, Ron is the best thing since sliced bread. And since all I've done is force my way of thinking, it doesn't correct any misconceptions or errors in what Ron's behavior is doing. That I have to educate the community in these things. This is also, by the way, why Jesus' instruction on discipline is such a big deal. Your brother sins, go to him in private. If he listens, you've won your brother. If he doesn't, take two or more. If he listens, great, you've won your brother. If not, bring him before the congregation. Educate. Educate them of the error, the injustice, the evil that the individual is doing this. And you will all then sit in judgment. Education is vital to the community of the truth, to what God is calling us to be as a society and a community. It's not enough to just simply force them out without ever talking about it. That's why we have certain individuals in the political realm, even today, who never have a chance of ever taking a portion of leadership, but yet they just won't ever shut up, and they are in the limelight all the time because nobody's ever been educated enough to deal with their falsehood. Sorry, I'll get off the soapbox. And I'm convinced, guys, when we talk about education of the community, that is what Paul is doing here in verses 3 and 5, okay? And talking, bringing to their attention, opening their eyes to the injustice, the breaking of the violating of the law that is going on there. But then in the following verses, when he looks out among the council, he's like, oh, you got some Sadducees there, you got some Pharisees there. Brethren, I'm on trial for the hope of the resurrection of the dead. And what happens within council? A riot. And they're going to tear him apart. And I think what he's doing there is nothing more than causing this disarray to show that these men are more interested in their own policies than they are in God's policies. It's kind of a strange way to educate, but it works. And so not only does judgment of leadership involve educating those in the community, but it means that we don't have the... how do I want to put this nicely? Yeah, we'll just put it that way. We don't get the privilege of hiding in the shadows. We don't get to be silenced through intimidation. That any form of education that we bring to the community of why we are engaging in certain behaviors and what we're doing is grounded in the wisdom of God and not our personal preferences. Raise your hand if you believe that God is the ruler of all things and in His hand are strength and power. What do you think God has purposed that strength and power for? That strength and power enables us to be just. To remain passive and silent when leadership is violent, greedy, impressive. To remain silent in those scenarios and situations is to deny the truth of what you just confessed. Know your rights. But recognize that knowing your rights means exercising your rights. That includes holding leadership accountable to the law, just like everyone else. And God calls us to judge leaders in that way. Any form. Could be your boss. Might get you fired. But that's who God is calling us to be. Let's remember that as we're dealing with the political spectrum over the upcoming years. We get ready for election time period. You guys know me pretty well by now. I hate these times of year. Many of you guys do too. Namely because I get text messages from weird people saying, hey, would you like to answer a questionnaire? And they call me Natasha. Which is even weirder. And the temptation is to say, delete the number, never call me again. I have drones on standby. But I've started taking surveys as Natasha. Guys, in all reality, we understand what the world is about. And we understand God's view of mankind in the world. And how many of us are thankful that God applies rule of law equally to even us? That as he looked at us in our sin and depravity and recognized that each of us was guilty, deserving of wrath, deserving of punishment, that he looked at that, looked at us as a whole and went, okay, Seth's sin's a pretty big deal. You know, he's got quite a bit on the plate there. And Brandon, yeah, he's got some too. But they're all worthy of death. And that Seth's sin is no greater in his eyes as it is Brandon's sin, because they're both deserving of wrath and punishment and death. And he would send his son to die so that we could all have equal opportunity of salvation. Hey, real quick, guess who got more salvation than the next guy? Nobody! I got the same salvation Wassam got. I got the same salvation Alan got, that Seth got. That this is another equal application of how God is viewing mankind when we are willing to submit ourselves to two very basic principles. That God is ruler over all things and he calls us to be just in our dealings with man across the board. I think our Savior put it this way. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Recognize where your sin has put you, the predicament that it is in. He will lift you out of it through his Son. And as we stand and sing the song this morning, if you are ready to take that step to enter into a just society, acting as a just citizen of a just society, ready to move forward under the light of his Son by making the confession of Jesus Christ and being baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, we encourage you, do that this morning while we stand and sing. Todd.